Hi, everybody. Good to see you. So, right before this call, there's a new Sacred Depths cohort that started about a month ago, and they had a call a little bit earlier today, and I was thinking about it. It was their deep listening practicum. Remember back when you were all baby sacred depthers and we had our deep listening practicum, the first one, and how far we've come since then? It's pretty amazing, huh? So, I've been looking forward to connecting with all of you. I am really excited for our call today. Housekeeping piece, I want to remind you all that we have a Q&A call coming up on March 7th. I was going to say in 2 weeks because it's not March yet, but it is actually March yet, and it's this coming Monday. We have one of our bonus coaching Q&A calls. So if you've been wanting to receive coaching, if you've been having a business question, a question on a client case study, or anything else, or if you just want to participate in the blueprinting, know that that space is there for you on Monday. I'm always so happy to see you there. Okay. So let's start off today a little differently. Let's start off with a little bit of a meditation. So wherever you are, I invite you to get comfortable. And if it feels good for you, close your eyes. And give yourself the gift of settling in, of remembering your body, of coming home to the sacred vessel of your body. Notice how you're feeling today without any judgment. Just noticing. Using your listening skills to notice how you're feeling. And I invite you to call forward in front of you your wisest self. I invite you to call forward in front of you your wisest self. You may see this one. And if you do notice how this wise one looks, notice the clothing they wear, notice the expression on their face, how they hold themselves. Or you may sense this one and this one's energy with you and in front of you. And either way, welcome, hold space for, connect with your wise one, your wisest self. And notice the energy of this one. Feel into the energy of this one. connect in with the energy of this one, the wisest part. And first, simply take it in. Take in the energy. Allow yourself to receive it. What this wise one feels like. And ask your wise one, the wisest part of you, what is it that they want you to know right now? What is it that they want you to know? Continuing to connect with your wise one and ask it, what's one action that it would like for you to take this week? What is one action that it would like for you to take this week? And continuing to connect with its energy. Just be with it for another moment. And thank it and be in gratitude. And then you can let it fade. Knowing that you have it inside of you. And when you're ready, open your eyes. Well, it's great to see and be with all of you. I really do miss you when we have a week off. So I've been just so excited to connect with all of you today. And I want to honor that. We're connecting in a moment that is also really hard in the world and hard for some of us. And I know it's been ongoing now for years, but I know that there's a lot of emotion that might be running through, or grief that might be running through, or anger or confusion. And I just want to acknowledge it and honor it and just say that all of you. Every single little last part, all of you is welcome here. So, today we're going to dive into getting off the wheel of self-sabotage. And similar to myth of perfection, it's another one of those topics that's going to kind of bring together so much of what we've been learning. Before we go there, I want to give a minute or two to just hear from you what's been percolating around myth of perfection. If you did, even though nevertheless, what's been percolating, or what did you see from that? Or if you've been working with your perfectionist, I'd love to hear one or two shares. Or if you've been working on it with clients, what are you seeing? Or what do you want to celebrate? What's been resonating? What's been percolating? Alana.
For me, I notice it's really related to my willingness to be visible. as a coach or even as a business owner, like telling people what I do, I want it to be perfect. Like, I really want it to be the right message, right? It's all about the right messaging, the right thing to say, the powerful thing to say, all of that. And I get so in my head, and I recognize that previously I was so in my head that I would do literally nothing. I would do actually nothing. And that's slowly starting to, undo itself. I'm grateful for the awareness that this container brought to it because, perhaps that's what's making the difference is just shining a light on it and like, taking a look, taking a look.
Sometimes that's the most important piece, right? Is that awareness. And if it makes you feel any better, I don't have a perfect message. It's always evolving. And yeah, I gave up a long time ago the like nailed it message thing. It's about like getting close enough and getting close enough and getting close enough. No perfection.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm so glad that it sounds like you're starting to show up a little more and take more action. So yay. Cindy.
I didn't like the exercise the first time I did it, but the second time, and I shared with you why, but the second time when there was something specific when I was teaching and someone interrupted me in the middle of my presentation, so it was a really good process to do afterwards. And then the awareness for me was how your mind goes, you defend yourself and then you, come up with solutions. And then the funny thing at the end was I did the what I call the good girl spiritual thing, going, oh well, she didn't really mean it was I was like, oh my gosh. But it was very interesting to just go back and look at how I responded to even though my helper interrupted me in the middle of a class, just to allow that flow. So thank you for that awareness. And I've used it a couple times with clients, and it's worked really well to get them where does their perfectionism come? And it really got them to go deeper as far as coming from their parents and how now they were working for people that were expecting the same thing from them.
Yeah, seeing those connections. Yeah, I'm so glad. And I'm so glad you didn't give up on the exercise. I know the topic you picked the first time was a toughie to jump in with. But yeah, as you're describing your process and as you described it in the Facebook group, I could feel that it really helped you soften towards yourself and reclaim some of your empowerment around that situation. Thank you.
Thanks.
Right. Well, if for whatever reason you didn't get to the even though nevertheless and you wanted to, no myth of perfection. You can do it the next 5 days, right? So you can always come to it. And as I shared last time, I'm not consistent, but the times that I am more consistent, or I do it a bunch of times on, on the same topic over the course of a week or 2 weeks, it's a little hard to sustain really beyond that, at least for me. I really see such a shift. Okay. So getting off the wheel of self-sabotage, another one in this kind of big module, overarching module of supporting clients to overcome obstacles. So with each of these tools, the befriend your fear, the resistance archetypes, the rewiring, the myth of perfection, et cetera, I just want to give you lots of different angles, lots of different ways and tools to have in your tool chest. For when a client is ready to overcome an obstacle. And you can also mix and match these. So I know that our brains sometimes want to try to compartmentalize and like to put it all into in nice little categories. So Joanna, tell me just exactly what to do when this happens. Is it this tool to use or that tool to use? And then when that happens with a client, should we use this or that? But I can tell you, after all of these decades of coaching and work deeply with other human beings, it's not having a formula like that doesn't work. You always want to coach the what based on the who. Embrace the messiness, embrace the crossover of the tools. Just know that you have them at your disposal. And so long as you are present to your client and you're listening deeply, you'll know which tool to use in which moment, or which two tools to use in which moments. I never, even when I read a client's pre-call form, I never go in with any expectation of what technique I'm going to use in that call. I may get some ideas, but I don't get attached to any of that. I show up and I listen and I see what's there for that day. Okay, the other piece I just wanted to mention before we start to define and look at self-sabotage, and you've heard me say this many times before, and I'm going to say it again, is that the way that each of these tools work and work best is when we really keep in mind the difference between a breakthrough and a transformation. So each of these tools that we're learning, they're great for breakthroughs. And then we also want to hold the space for the client to take the breakthrough and be persistent and persistent in their actions and in their practices to create the results and to create the change. Even when, and this goes for me and for so many clients that I've worked with, there are maybe one, two issues or fears in my life, maybe a shadow or two that has shifted, and then it's shifted forever. Like I don't think about that thing anymore. It doesn't ever come up, even if I'm on a growth edge. But that may even be generous to say that there are a couple that don't. The truth is that when we work, we work on something, and then when we're at our next growth edge, it's natural for it to come up. And that's not a bad thing. That doesn't mean that we've done something wrong, or as coaches or practitioners, we've done anything wrong. It just means that this is how human beings work. We have to work on our stuff. We do. So the point, and for today specifically, it's not to eliminate self-sabotage forever, right? Or it's not to eliminate the myth of perfection forever, if only, right? Or not to eliminate the not good enoughness forever. The point is different than that. So, and it's twofold. So, number one, it's to work with the obstacle enough to support the client to then take the next step or the next series of steps, right? Because when we have the breakthrough, there's that energetic opening, there's more motivation, there's more willingness, right? And then we want to hold that container for the client to take the next series of steps. And then we probably are gonna, come back to working on that inner peace, right? And then take the next series of steps. So that's one piece here. And then the second piece here, which is, I guess a philosophical piece, which you can kind of check for yourself to see if it resonates for you. We're not here to like banish these things forever. We're here to live a more meaningful life and a more layered life and a more deep life, if you will. One where we know ourselves well. And for me personally, I don't think a good life means that I'm consistently happy or I'm consistently productive. For me, it's more about finding meaning, connecting with myself and others and the world, understanding how I'm showing up and what's happening with me, and having compassion and love and feeling the sacredness in all of it. When we apply a like, it just needs to be fixed attitude, it's hard to feel that sacredness and that meaning, if that makes sense. Any thoughts on that or anything that wants to be shared on that before we continue? All right. So, what is self-sabotage? We could define it many, many different ways, but for the sake of how we're going to be looking at it today, this is how we'll define it. And I'll pop this in the chat too. So it's when your client consciously or unconsciously gets in the way of achieving their own goals and desired evolution. I know that's pretty big. I pop that in the chat. When your client consciously or unconsciously gets in the way of achieving their own goals or desired evolution. So you all know me well enough by now to know that the way my mind works is I like to put things into buckets, and I find it helpful to think of self-sabotage in two different types of buckets. So one that I'll call single occurrence self-sabotage, or we could call it explicit, meaning you notice it. It's just like it's more explicit and it's way more obvious as self-sabotage. I'll give some examples in a moment. And then the second bucket I would call patterned self-sabotage, or a more subtle. So we've got single occurrence, which is more explicit. And patterned, it's like it happens over and over, but it's more subtle. You may not recognize it at the outset as self-sabotage. So, some examples of single occurrence or explicit self-sabotage. You have a really, really important meeting, maybe like a career, one of those career-defining meetings, and you are an always on-time person, but you show up late for that meeting. Right? It's like kind of obvious in a way. Or you have something going on in a relationship and you end up telling off the person in a very inappropriate way, in a way where you burn a bridge. Or this is one example of my single occurrence. Well, I guess it's more patterned, but you have a big presentation or event, and you just don't think about what you're wearing until 20 minutes before you have to be there, and all of a sudden realize you have nothing in your closet that works well. You have an enrollment conversation coming up, and you don't prepare for it. You come in, just not ready for it. You don't want to get pregnant, but you also don't use birth control. Some of those could maybe fall into the patterned category as well. Patterned is more like you may not notice at the outset that this is self-sabotage, and there's usually really good excuses or reasonable reasons for the self-sabotage. So here's some examples, and you'll see the difference when I give some of these examples. You consistently stay up too late, like later than what is good for you. And then you don't have enough energy during the day, right? But it's just like, it's such a patterned thing that you don't notice that that's self-sabotage. Or you consistently overschedule yourself. So you have no time in your schedule. You know, you don't have enough space or bandwidth. But it's like you just think that's the way it has to be because you're so patterned in overscheduling yourself. You don't realize that that is a type of self-sabotage. Maybe it can be about food, right? So for me, for a long time, I knew that quinoa did not agree with my digestive system and that I wouldn't feel well all day, but I would still eat it. And it was just such a pattern thing that I didn't realize I was actually sabotaging myself. Maybe you get referrals and you just consistently don't follow up with the referrals. So what's an example or two of a particular time, a single occurrence of self-sabotage for you? So I'll give one other example. I don't know if I've shared this with this group before. Many years ago, I was dating this guy and he was, I don't know, had some position in a big company for marketing. And he asked me if I wanted to come to a brainstorming meeting with Bono of U2 for Bono's not for profit. And I would like couldn't believe that I was gonna be sitting at the table with Bono, you know, with six people at a table brainstorming for his not-for-profit. And wouldn't you know it, the morning of the meeting, I decided I wasn't dating the guy anymore. I decided that like he didn't really want me there, and so I just didn't show up without even telling him. Right, like that was a moment of like explicit, so clear self-sabotage. So what's an example? Maybe yours is not as dramatic, but what's an example for you of kind of like an explicit? Rana.
I had one this month, actually, for February. In my business with my clients, where I was writing content for our monthly theme in this offer, and I got all twisted up in my own myth of perfection around it for literally, I think, the first time ever in my business. Mm-hmm. And I usually can go, I can release this perfectionism and be okay with it and still trust that, you know, I'm not delivering crap. Yeah. And that my clients are still going to benefit from what it is that I have to offer and share with them. And long story short, that did not go out the door this month with everything else going on. And I just know like my energy was so whacked out with everything else on my plate right now. So I just shot an email to all the clients in that particular program, took responsibility for it. I think was appropriately vulnerable without going into, you know, all the things. And I just had to, you know, give myself a break with that. And I didn't hear back from every client, but a couple that I did hear back from said that they would never in a million years question my commitment to them or to my work in the world.
I love that you caught where you were going with it and then got yourself back on track and sent that email and just shared from your heart and were vulnerable. Feel it also something like that takes the shame out of it too, you know, to be able to do that. And so really,
I don't know why I'm so emotional about this, but
sounds like it was a stretch for you to catch it and to be vulnerable and then receive those beautiful reflections, you know, in the face of all of it. So
yeah,
really beautifully done.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Libby.
When I was a young adult, I used to play piano and I would accompany people and or play in a social gathering, like an official event or something. And while I was playing, my hands would start to shake. It was like a physiological response. And then my pinky would go numb. And then my next finger. And I would literally have these neurological tingles all the way up. And then parts of my brain would go numb and I'd start to fall apart and hit bad notes. And it was a mind physiological connection of self-sabotage. And I'm looking back on it now when you ask how have we done it, and I literally would fall to bits on some really important events and just stink it up. And I just look back and I laugh. My way of coping at the time, of course, was to back up into the shrubbery and, you know, stop doing it as much, and because I didn't know about the mind game back then. And yeah, that's funny looking back at the things, the way our body reacts too.
Yeah, absolutely. We can have those physiological reactions. I'm glad as you're looking back, you're kind of connecting some of those dots and seeing. Good. Thank you. Yeah, Kim is saying in the chat, I think not giving ourselves self-care is often a patterned occurrence. We'll get there in a second. Yes. Alana's saying my book draft is due to my editor on Friday and I've done less writing on it in the past 3 weeks than ever. Yeah, that's a good example. Cindy left late for a workshop, got lost on the way to the workshop, did not have directions handy and didn't give yourself enough time to arrive. I know that one well. Yes, that's another great example. So what about examples of patterned? What's an example in your life of the patterned or the subtle self-sabotage? Who's got an example? Shauna.
So I loved your example of food. That is a huge one for me. As you're saying it, I'm literally sitting here eating a hunk of cheese and I'm completely allergic to dairy. And I didn't realize it for so long that it was a form of self-sabotage. And I actually term it as a little bit even more insidious than that, that it's a way for me to almost torture myself. Mm-hmm. It's a way for me almost to punish myself, but in the guise of, but cheese is delicious. It's not though. I mean, it's not for me.
Right. Yeah.
I love the taste of it.
There's a reasonable reason.
But all these ways that I will sabotage or punish myself by not preparing food that's healthy and heals my body versus harms my body. And waiting and waiting and waiting to take the time to care for myself. So then I say, well, I'm just gonna, I didn't make myself lunch before the call. So I'm just gonna grab an apple, which is fine, but I'll have a piece of cheese too.
Yeah.
It's so subtle because you think, well, I
didn't have time. And so it's protein. And so let me take it. Right. But yeah, absolutely.
And it's such an important awareness. It's such an important awareness.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. I'm glad that you're seeing that. Good. Let's see. Lisa Joy is saying, I resonated with overscheduling and then dragging myself through the day to get it all done. Yeah. Overscheduling and then wondering why I'm exhausted. Hema's saying, I'm really good at talking myself out of things, not buying things, not spending money on myself, not accepting invitations. Yeah. Karen, not scheduling into my calendar things that are important for me, so days just get away. Yeah, procrastinating. Okay, good. So let's go a little further with this. Hold on, I just lost my notes. If you were to look at and either the explicit example that you came up with or the patterned example that you came up with, if there was a root fear or negative belief behind it, what would that root fear or negative belief be? So for example, if you consistently stay up too late, what's either the fear or the belief that you're telling yourself on why it's okay to stay up too late or why you should stay up late or why you need to? Yeah, and Rana and Holly are giving some other good examples of patterned in the chat. Thank you. So I'd love to hear, an example or two of the fear or the belief. So Ray is saying fear of anxiety, not being able to handle the anxiety. And so procrastination. So when I start it, there's so much energy. Yeah. And then you don't feel it. Good. Linda. You there, Linda?
Sorry, yeah, not unmuted. So I take all these classes and I get so excited at the beginning, you know, and it's like I'm the thing behind it is I love learning and I this is going to make me a better coach or better whatever, but underneath it's like I'm not good enough. I don't know enough yet in order to do what I say that I want to do. And then I don't put myself out there to just be doing it, you know, like I hide behind and I don't even realize. I mean, I've probably got three classes right now that I signed up for because, well, it's on right now and I don't want to miss it. for next time, but I'm not doing it either. So anyway, that's kind of interesting for me to see that.
Yeah, I'm so glad. I mean, I'm not glad because I know it's not fun. And also I'm so glad. Yeah, one of the things, whenever I'm sharing about sacred depths, one of the things that I say to people is, if you're going to use this as a way to hide from actually taking action, if you're ready, then don't, please don't step in, right? And it's like, what you're sharing, I think, is so resonant. It is so easy to do that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good motivation for anyone else in the circle who's like, oh, I thought I was going to be taking more action and I feel like I can, but I haven't been, and I've been hiding behind, I need more learning. You can continue learning here and take action at the same time. Jamie.
Yeah, I've been trying to get under this one for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And it feels really up. And, you know, I was going to say the self-sabotage is a question of vision, like my pattern, like having a big vision. Mm-hmm. I can feel my heart beating. And the underlying fear is around power, mm-hmm. That I am that powerful, mm-hmm. and that it could be caustic to others. It could be misused. It could be finding myself alone. And I find that I don't believe any of those anymore. But the fact that my heart is beating, and the fact that I do step away from my vision just by setting a time for myself and really owning it, is that it's still a very alive pattern.
Yes. Yes. So first of all, I just want to acknowledge you for sharing it, because especially with the fear of I have too much power or my power can hurt others, it's so easy for us to just stick that in the shadow. And the fact that you're sharing it, I think, says so much about your readiness for it to shift, like to be seen in that, right? And I also love the recognition that you don't believe any of that anymore. So you're actually moving forward. You're not, you know, at square one mm-hmm. with it. And I think as we go further in our time together today and over this week, I think this one would be a really good one for you to work with. And we're going to chart out the wheel in a moment and go deeper with it. So yeah. Mindy.
Hi. So I'm thinking about all the times that I will push and push and push myself to do so much that I end up actually hurting myself or making myself feel sicker. And then I can't do anything for days. Yeah. And, you know, I think the fear behind that is that I won't get anything done, or something won't get done that's really important. Or if I don't do it, no one else will do it. I'll pick up the slack. I'll miss something. Things will fall apart. And then I push, push, push. And then I probably end up doing less work because I've now made myself ill.
Yeah. Yeah. I know it's not a fun place to be, but I'm happy you're seeing it in this way. It's so important to see that that's a pattern, right? Because you could just kind of be like, that's just the way it is. And this is how I operate. Yeah. Right, but just starting to see that as the pattern, and that's a good one for us to go deeper with next too. So keep on working with that. Thank you. All right, let's keep on going. Yeah, and Jenna sharing the pattern of overbooking or saying yes because you believe it's your job to be accommodating. Yeah, I know that one. Okay. So it can be really helpful to understand that self-sabotage, especially the patterned, happens in a cycle. So self-sabotage often happens in a cycle. And That's why I call it the wheel of self-sabotage. And so this is generally what it looks like. You start usually unconsciously with a fear or a negative belief, negative thought, or, you know, a resistance, right, which is a symptom of fear. And it's, like I said, it's usually in the blind spot. You're not conscious or like very conscious that that fear or that belief is there. And then what happens next? Well, that belief or fear or resistance that's in the blind spot yields a self-sabotage action, a pushing yourself and not letting yourself have your vision, et cetera, et cetera. But it doesn't, the cycle doesn't stop there. So that self-sabotage action happens, you take it, and then there's an impact from that. There's a result from that self-sabotage action. And the result usually mirrors or gives further evidence for the original negative thought, belief, or fear, or reason for the resistance. You take the action and then there's fallout from it, right? Which strengthens or accelerates, right? So then we come back to the top of the wheel. It accelerates that original and makes it even stronger, which then leads to the next self-sabotage action, which then has a result that then just is like more evidence and fuel for the fire of the negative thought or the fear or the resistance, and then on and on and on you go in the wheel. So let me give you a couple of examples that will hopefully illustrate. Let's say if the original thought or belief is, it's hard for me to date. I'm just like not a good dater. It's very hard for me to go on dates. So then maybe the action from that is that you don't put your profile on the dating website because you're just not good at dating, right? So you don't put your profile on, and then what's the result of that? Well, you have no dates because you haven't put yourself out there. And then that reinforces this original idea, it's really hard for me to date. And maybe it drives it in further, that neural pathway gets grooved even more. And so then what happens? Well, you know, maybe you allow yourself to go on a blind date, but the self-sabotage, because you just believe that dating is hard for you, is that you act like a total weirdo on that blind date. I've been there, by the way, just so everybody knows. And then that reinforces, right? It's like that. Then the result is like, ugh, that sucked. Not only is it hard for me to date, but I hate dating and it's not worth it. And then the next self-sabotage action is like, you don't even go on another blind date the next time someone tries to set you up. Or here's another example of the wheel. Maybe there's an underlying fear or belief of, I suck at sales. I am not good at sales conversations. And because of that belief, I'm not good at sales conversations, you get a referral, but the self-sabotage action is like, you just like mess that conversation up. You go in with this mindset of, I'm not good, I'm not good, I'm not good. That sales call does not go well. What does that do? It reinforces this idea that I am not good at sales. I suck at sales. And then the next action is you don't even make an ask. You don't even ask for referrals, or you don't invite, you know, the next person that seems like a good prospect into a sales conversation with you. then you don't get any new clients. And then I really hate sales and I'm bad at business and this is never going to work. Right. And then it on and on the wheel that you go. In essence, the wheel doesn't naturally allow for a positive outcome to happen. The wheel doesn't allow for a positive outcome to happen. It ensures that you or your client are going to stay in that self-sabotage mode. And the wheel is pretty sinister because the cycle produces evidence that isn't real, but it masquerades as real. It's like a downward spiral that cycles on itself. That makes sense so far? Okay. So take a moment. I want to actually invite you to draw out this cycle, this wheel of self-sabotage for a piece that you're working on, maybe one of the answers to the earlier questions of pattern self-sabotage for you. Plot out a couple of cycles around the wheel for you, how that has played out for you. Take another moment with that. Here's a question. What thoughts, feelings, and moods do you experience when you're on the wheel? What thoughts, feelings, moods do you experience when you're on the wheel? Yeah, familiar, trapped, confirming the evidence. And then here's another question. Yeah, Tess is saying disappointment, resignation, urgency, rushed, exhaustion, anxiety. Yeah, and then judgmental. Yeah. There's a lot of judgment on that wheel, and we're going to talk about that too. So here's another thing to sense into. Have any unhelpful or negative thoughts or new unhelpful negative thoughts or new fears evolved for you simply through the process of being on the wheel? So in other words, it may have started out that you're just like a little bit questioning if you're a good parent. And then because of that, there's this self-sabotage action of, you know, reacting harshly when something happens with a kid. And then you feel so badly and in so much shame that it almost like reinforces this, you know, then you go to this place of, I totally suck as a parent and I shouldn't be a parent. And, you know, I'm a danger to my children, right? I'm sharing this again because that once happened to me. And thankfully, like I caught where I was going with that, but it took one more cycle because in that feeling of the like, oh my God, I suck. I was then even more harsh in it, right? It caused me to be, because that was the only reaction I had in the moment, right? And then I finally was able to break it. But have any new fears or new negative thoughts evolved simply from being on the wheel? Maybe yes, maybe no, but just something to look at and notice. Ray is asking, can you speak to how the belief of bad parent speaks to the behavior? Ray, can you ask that question voice to voice? Because I want to make sure I'm getting it the right way.
Yeah. Can you speak to how the belief that I'm a bad parent or you're a bad parent leads to the behavior of overreacting?
Yeah.
It's such as opposed to people thinking that you're reacting to the child as opposed to the belief.
Yeah, it's such a great question. So for me, that may not be true for all people in all situations, but for me in that situation, what happened was in my head, I'm going, I'm not a good enough parent. I don't know how to handle this. I'm not a good enough parent. I don't know how to handle this. And because of that, it took me out of my inner wisdom. It took me out of my feeling of love for my child in that moment. And instead, the reaction was harsh.
Got it. Because people seem to think that things are a reaction more than they are a result of the belief. So saying that it took you out of your inner wisdom gives me a place to not only understand it for myself, but also with my client.
Yeah, no, it's a great clarifying question. And always coach the what based on the who, right? That may not happen in every situation. That may not be the case in every situation. Okay, great. I'd love to hear maybe just one share. We still have a lot to look at today, but I'd love to just hear one share voice to voice on what you're seeing so far, what you're noticing. Who wants to share? What are you seeing? What feels important? Linda.
Well, what really strikes me is that it's like these are excuses for being really hard on ourselves. Mm. And that it just hit me as I was, you know, writing the little progression of this, that underneath is like And that's, I suppose, part of the self-sabotage, that the message is that, see, you're just not good enough, or you're just, you know, so you keep reinforcing the really root underlying thought or belief without realizing it. I mean, so I saw how highly judgmental and self-critical I can be when I'm far enough in the cycle to realize, oh shit, there I am doing this again. You know, and you just then you're just even spinning more in the same thing. So that struck me with this.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a cycle that generates more and more self-criticism. And also, we'll talk about in a few minutes, one that can also generate more and more shame too, simply just the being on the wheel itself. Good. Okay. So, okay. So then what do we do? What do we do with all of this? That's the question. How do we support our clients and support ourselves? Well, we want to get off the wheel. And or we want to get our clients off the wheel, or support our clients to step off the wheel. And the way to get off the wheel, what's needed for that is a pattern break, right? Because this is a cycle, it's a pattern. What's needed is a pattern break. So we've already in this program learned a number of ways to start to break up pattern on the thought level or the fear level or the resistance level, right? Resistance archetypes, befriend your fear, rewiring work, even though nevertheless, working with the perfectionist. We've looked a lot at breaking pattern on the inner. But here's the thing with the wheel is that we want to break pattern on the inner piece, the thoughts, the fears, the resistance. And then we also want to break pattern on the action level at the same time. Which sounds easy enough, except breaking pattern at the action level is usually uncomfortable. It is uncomfortable to start going to bed earlier when you're used to going to bed later. It is uncomfortable to follow up on referrals if you're used to not following up on referrals. It is uncomfortable to put boundaries on your schedule and schedule less if you're used to overscheduling. We want to work on the inner pieces. We're going to talk more about that. We want to use any skills that we have to work on the inner pieces, but then we also want to support our clients with the outer pattern break as well. So to break pattern, we have to be willing to be uncomfortable. To break pattern. And I know this is so obvious, but it's also kind of, I think, profound in a way. Now, here's I think a piece that's important to consider. Discomfort or being uncomfortable is different from pain. Remember, we spoke about the pain body when we looked at rewiring thought patterns. Discomfort is actually different than pain. And the strange thing about humans is that we gravitate towards the pain body, but we try to avoid discomfort at all costs. What's the difference between discomfort and pain? Share in the chat. What's your sense? What's the difference between discomfort and pain? pain is often the physical manifestation of our emotional comfort. Discomfort is inconvenient and therefore easier to ignore and navigate. These are great. Who else? Anyone else want to chime in? Discomfort can be ignored. Hold on, I just lost that. Discomfort can be ignored by avoiding something, whereas pain is immediate. These are all great. Discomfort requires change. Pain keeps us where we are in our comfort zone. Simona saying, discomfort is almost a warning system. In pain, it's happened and action may be needed. Pain seems more acute, whereas discomfort is chronic. Discomfort is like an annoying gnat and pain is like a bee sting. These are all great. Discomfort feels like the threshold of something that may get stronger. Pain is what it is. Yeah. Discomfort is often resistance to what is. Pain is a part of life. I want to offer this, and a lot, I think almost everybody, what everybody shared and wrote was getting at this. So what I want to offer is that discomfort is a place of growth and where we can build our resilience. Discomfort can be a place of growth and where we can build our resilience. So think about anything in your life that you've really learned and that has been a big lesson for you. Maybe not for every single thing, but for most, chances are that there was some discomfort in order to get to the growth. So, for example, when I first started my business, I did not think I was entrepreneurial at all. It was the last thing that I thought I was. And I had to go through the discomfort step by step by step of actually showing myself that I am entrepreneurial. Or learning how to, I think at this point, I'm really masterful at sales conversations, but to get to that point, I had to, like, every sales call the first few years was like a point of discomfort, but I had to learn how to be resilient and stick with it and work on it and move through that discomfort is actually what created that growth to become masterful at sales. Does that make sense? Yeah, okay. What's your relationship to discomfort? Yeah, and I love, Rana, what you're saying. Discomfort as an inconvenience, short term. Pain is long standing and lasts and feels excruciating over the long term. Yes. So take a moment, yeah, and just sense in for yourselves, what's your relationship with discomfort? Are you all like, yeah, I'm up for discomfort because I know it's going to equal growth, right? Or do you like run as far as you can from that feeling of discomfort? Yeah, both. And Jenna saying, for me, discomfort often equates to awkwardness and feeling awkward and nervous at times. Yeah. Yeah, relationship to risk. Yeah. discomfort feels normal and known, so crappy but safe, yeah. Kim is saying, I've experienced discomfort as a point of recalibrating. Mindy says, I feel like it's a given and I just have to put up with it and get on with it. And Mindy, I wonder if that's discomfort or if that's pain or if that's both for you. Simona.
Hi, everyone. I was trying something new today, but I don't think it worked. I was trying to like stretch out and make this a thing where you guys are all on my big, you know, where I work out, except for like where my workout videos are, but it's interesting. But hi, I think I'm in a different place and I might need someone else to share examples because my brain was thinking about like discomfort, and maybe it's just because I just came out of like a lot of neurobiology, neuroanatomy, but like, so I might be thinking this wrong, but like when we're in action, we're in one part of our brain, and when we're not in action, we're in another part of our brain, which is the default mode network. And so like when I'm picturing pain, it's like something has already happened and I have an action that I have to take, and I'm not feeling a lot of feelings because there's something, there's a crisis or there's a thing, and there's, it needs to happen. It needs to be handled. And I'm handling it. But if I'm in discomfort, I'm like not in action and I'm like thinking. And so like that, depending on what the category of thing is, if it's a place where it's one of where my material lives, then like when I'm, if it's a place where I'm confident and collected, then when I'm not thinking or taking action, everything seems just moving along. But if it just happens to be in one of those things, that one of those strands that touches my material, well, then that discomfort is like a lot of thoughts with no action is how I'm thinking about it. But I might feel like I'm not fully, that does not feel like it's connecting to everybody's really wise comments in the chat. So does that make sense?
It absolutely does. And yes, and I don't want to invalidate that because I 100%, not in relation to what we're talking about, but everything that you're saying makes sense. And this might be helpful, Simona, because I think we can think of discomfort in lots of different contexts. I'm talking specifically about the context of wanting to do something differently, like go to bed earlier or not overschedule oneself, or actually think about what am I going to wear, you know, consistently for important meetings, or show up fully for, right? So yes to everything that you're saying. And then maybe it's just helpful also for you to think about that kind of discomfort of breaking a pattern. Good. Holly's saying, for me, I grew up believing that discomfort meant there was a problem that was urgent to solve rather than something to learn from and grow. Pain was more shameful. Okay. We're going to keep on going because there's still a lot to look at today. So when we're working with clients to break pattern, part of the work is supporting our clients to get comfortable with discomfort. It makes it easier to start breaking that pattern on the action level if we can get comfortable with discomfort. So what are some ways that we can support our clients to get comfortable with discomfort? One, if you remember way back, I think to our visioning module, the stretch, risk, or die exercise. So asking, you know, so in this situation, you're going to bed too late, but you know, you want to break pattern, client. What would be a stretch here? What would be a risk here. And some of you mentioned risk in the chat, very intuitive. And then what would be, I'd rather die than do that, right? And then support the client to choose an action from either the stretch or the risk zone for themselves. So they know that they're not going to die, right? Like the die is the pain. We don't want it, we're not going into the pain zone with this pattern break. We're staying in the discomfort growth zone. Does that make sense? So if we can really support them to see that difference, another way we can support our clients to get comfortable with discomfort is to ask questions to create awareness around how their comfort is actually causing pain, how they're staying in their comfort, staying on the wheel, not going to bed earlier, whatever it is actually causing pain. Another way we can support our clients to get comfortable with discomfort is creating awareness around places in their life where they've been uncomfortable, and then that has created strength and growth and resilience, right? That they're not going to break from being in discomfort. Another way to support clients to get comfortable with discomfort is to normalize discomfort during the growth process. I do this all the time, right? Because we have a society that somehow learned that we always need to be comfortable. And I just want to say, like, especially if you are a person that has a lot of privileges, you especially learned, even in not so many words, that like it's your birthright to always be comfortable, right? And we need comfort for our survival. And it's just done us a big disservice because, again, like part of growth is being uncomfortable sometimes. Part of getting what we want is being uncomfortable sometimes. So normalizing that. Another way that we can support our clients to get comfortable with discomfort is to strengthen, give focus, or befriend the parts of themselves that trust, or that have hope, or that have more passion or confidence. So the discomfort can sometimes become a little bit easier to be with if we can put it side by side with a deep feeling of hope, or a deep feeling of trust, or the passion for the project that they want to complete, or confidence in themselves, right? So you can do this as a BYF process, but instead of befriending the fear, go deeper and befriend the part of themselves that trusts. Or like we did at the beginning of this call, their wise part of themselves, or their hope, or, you know, their love. So we can befriend, you know, the unsavory parts, which are not unsavory at all, like our fear. But then we can also befriend the parts that, and go deeper and embody more deeply the parts that, you know, everybody might agree are savory, right? Like that trust and that hope. So let me pause here because that was a lot. Thoughts, questions, what's coming together so far? We still have a bit to do, but I'd love to hear a share or two. Anyone want to share? What are you seeing? What feels important? Ray's saying in the chat along the lines of privilege, if one has experienced a lot of trauma, both personal and collective, one can avoid discomfort. I'm so glad you're bringing that up, Ray. And that's why also we all, if we have a privilege, we want to check our filters because, for example, if we have a client that's experienced a lot of trauma, it may not be right for them to experience discomfort in the way that we think it's right for them to experience discomfort. That might trigger more trauma, right? So we always want to check filters and be aware of that. Mindy.
What keeps coming to mind is not bypassing ourselves. And I think it's what it call kind of all boils down to actually acknowledging your truth. Even if you don't, it's in the shadows, you don't quite see it, or it doesn't feel good. And for a lot of people, that's super, super hard.
Yeah.
And I think especially if it's something you said you're not even really aware of, to bring that awareness to the forefront of your mind is a really big deal.
It is a huge deal. It is a very huge deal. You're absolutely right. And sometimes just sitting with the discomfort of something can actually be so healing. Mm-hmm. Because it builds the resilience to be with what is. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Okay, so in a moment, I'm gonna go through steps to take clients when they're on the wheel, but one more kind of foundational piece that I wanna just share, I already mentioned it. It's just that the wheel can sometimes generate shame, and then the shame can sometimes be more derailing than the original fear or negative belief itself, right? We looked at this a little bit when we were talking about fear. So when someone is on the wheel, it may be that shame becomes a driving part of the show. The more that someone takes self-sabotaging actions, the more shame they feel about the results of those actions, which in turn, you know, reinforces the beliefs, et cetera, et cetera. I name this to say, number one, in all situations, particularly in this situation, but really in all situations, particularly, we want to make sure that we're not inadvertently shaming our clients when they're, and particularly what we're talking about today, when they're in self-sabotage mode. So, oh my God, I can't believe you did that. Oh, you know, we spoke about this. You should know better. Or like, ugh, right? Like even sometimes the subtlest little, if someone is already in a place of shame, sometimes the subtlest little thing can sometimes trigger that even more. So for me, when I am working with a client and I see that they're on the wheel, I always remember energy follows energy. And I see them and approach them and hold them, that they are whole and complete, right? Even while being on the cycle, the wheel of self-sabotage, we are whole and complete. We are lovable. There is so much possibility. There is nothing wrong with us. There is nothing to fix, right? And sometimes if I notice that a client is being particularly hard on themselves, I will say, there's no shame in this, right? I'll normalize it, right? There's no shame. I get. And there's no shame in this. And this is how I see you, even in this, right? And that can go such a long way. Okay. So in our last 5 minutes, I'm going to go through supporting, you know, we've already looked at it, but I'm just going to bring all the pieces together now for you. So when you notice that a client is self-sabotaging, and you can kind of see they're on the wheel of self-sabotage, here's kind of some steps you can take your client through. Number one, create awareness about the wheel. So if you sense that your client is on the wheel, you do a little consulting, you can tell them about the wheel, just like we did today. I kind of laid out the wheel, and then, you know, you can ask questions so the client can see, right? Create awareness like we all did today. Just that drawing out and seeing it, just that alone, that's the first opening. That creating awareness can be so helpful. And start to create openings around it. So we want to create awareness, and you don't have to do it by drawing it out either. You can just ask questions, etc. Having that visual and the exercise of drawing it is, I have found though, can be particularly helpful for a lot of people. So you want to create awareness. Second thing you want to do is you want to start to poke holes in the pattern on the inner level. Right? So you want to identify what that core fear is, the core negative belief, the resistance, etc., and then use one of your tools for starting to poke holes on the inner level. Befriend your fear, rewiring, even though nevertheless, perfection, you have a lot. You want to create awareness around resilience. Support your clients to be okay with the discomfort of taking a new action, right? So even after you do a BYF and it's like, okay, you know, and now I'm ready to take this next action, there's, right, like we still support our client to be in the discomfort, right? To normalize it, etc. And then finally, break the pattern on the outer level, right? So either, you know, this may not be an exact order, but support your client to identify an action step they can take to step off the wheel. So we're breaking it on the inner and the outer. Any thoughts? What's coming together? What do you want to share, or what do you want to ask before we wrap for today? And what are you seeing?
Thank you, Joanna. This has just been really helpful. I haven't really given a lot of thought to self-sabotage, and it's just, you've made it so concrete, you know, with the visual and the wheel and being, you know, I loved the sharing and what you shared about discomfort and being okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our culture, it's so true. Our culture just does not allow for that at all.
Yeah.
And that's what's like addictions and, you know, we're not willing to be, not like, you know, demeaning, lessening addiction, but behavior, but I'm just seeing, you know, why it's so easy to fall into.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many cultural messages that say it's not okay. You're doing something wrong.
And even like the media, you know, you watch any TV show and it's always like, it's like, where do they turn when they're feeling discomfort?
Yeah.
They turn to, yeah,
so, absolutely. Yeah. And probably, you know,
demonstrated.
Yes, absolutely. And I often say, and it's probably come up in a demo or some of you have observed, y'all often say to clients, I'm so sorry, you know, that you're feeling the discomfort, but I'm also so happy that you're in the awareness, right? Whatever awareness has come through, even just saying something like that can help with the messaging and the normalizing of it. Good. Okay. So if you're working with a partner, on your next session, look at, if it makes sense, with whatever issue you're working on, look at it through the lens of the wheel and see if you can work to break pattern, both levels, build resilience. I am thinking about all of you and sending you love, and I'm around if there's anything that you need. And I can't wait to see what evolves from being more aware of your wheels. Oh, and I just last piece I'll say, in the spirit of breaking pattern, find a place on the wheel that you plotted out today to break an outer action and work on that over the next couple days, and then find another place and work on that, and then find another place and work on that. And if you need to do some BYFs with yourself as you do it, or rewiring, do that too, but really work this for yourself, see what comes of it. All right, sending you all lots of love, and I'll talk to you soon.